All right. Welcome to No Better Time. This is Phil Salter, and I'm really excited about today's episode with Betsy Jorgensen, someone who is a really talented person and a really awesome person and really successful. She does a lot of photography and stuff on the side, so I can really relate to her on that level. And she's really good at it. Beautiful, like portrait kind of stuff, family photography, the kind of stuff I don't like doing. But she's really good at that. But that's kind of, like I said, that's something I relate to her on. But she's also being able to kind of work her way up from a corporate situation, being the primary breadwinner in her home. And that's something I wanted to kind of address, as I realized listening back as I interviewed her that I'm asking her questions that I wouldn't really ask a man about, like being a woman in the workplace and things. And I don't want that to overshadow the fact that she's just a successful person, a successful business person, a successful employee and boss. It's just something that I think is interesting and I like to, in some ways, address because it's, you know, it is the elephant in the room sometimes, the disparity between opportunities and treatment of women and minorities and things like that. But I don't want that to be all that defines her, right? It's not the only thing about her that's interesting. And I think you'll find that as you listen. Really cool. She gets into just talking about the things and that she's kind of learned about when it comes to negotiating salaries and raises. And when you take on new positions within a company internally, how do you negotiate to make more money? Because not all of us are going to go start our own business, or maybe we're in the process. But in the meantime, we work somewhere many times and we want to make the most of that opportunity. So this is a really good conversation with her, and I hope you enjoyed that. But first, I wanted to kind of share a conversation I had with my sister, Angela. She texted me randomly last week, and last week I kind of just didn't release any episodes. It's funny because the most recent episode I had was Todd Bowerly, where I talked about how this podcast is my one thing right now, the thing that's really pushing me to look for opportunities of growth and development. And then I found it suddenly really hard and cumbersome and exhausting, the idea of editing and recording last week. And I don't know if it was just once you make certain realizations and you realize its importance, it just suddenly becomes more heavy for me. And so it made it harder for me to do it last week. But she randomly texted me last Tuesday and she said, I'm loving your podcast. It's very inspiring and informative. I appreciate you catering to those of us who don't know a lot about finance and business. I'm learning a ton. I just wanted to thank you for putting positive energy out into the world and reaping the benefits. And I was just like, wow, that's exactly what I needed to hear at that time. And of course, the conversation went on and I thanked her and told her how timely it was that she was giving me this feedback. And so really awesome to hear that, you know, from someone I care about. But in general, it's just really good to hear that this does help people, and that something she mentioned is she likes how she can kind of listen and grow with me and step by step. And as we go on, the concepts are meant to get more in depth and complex, and that's how it should be. So if you listen from the beginning, you should be able to grow with me, and naturally things will become more complicated as we get deeper into this. But I want to continue to bring this information to you. So if you have suggestions or requests for topics, you can email me at nobettertime.podcast@gmail.com. You can also rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen if those are options. You can always follow or subscribe wherever you listen. And let me know. Thanks so much. Hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to No Better Time, a financial journey with me, Phil Salter, as I learn about finances and investing. Join me and we can grow together towards a bright financial future, because there's no better time than the present to get moving on your financial goals. All right. Welcome to No Better Time. I'm Phil Salter, and I'm joined today with Betsy Jorgensen. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So happy to have you. I know we've been kind of going back and forth for like a week or two now, and not super long, but I'm just really excited that we're doing this and that you're giving me some of your weekend.
I hope you're giving me easy questions, Phil.
Oh, they're going to be hard balls. It's like, you're going to get into all the political issues. I'm just kidding. No, but Betsy is someone who's just so awesome. In fact, her husband, Max, is my workout buddy, and we go all the time to the gym. So something I've always appreciated about you and Max is as soon as you guys moved into the neighborhood, like what? How long has it been? Three years now,
a little over 2 years.
Like how long were you here before you guys really started reaching out and started being social?
Well, I remember it was just a couple weeks in. We had like a neighborhood little barbecue. Of course, had we moved in just a year ago, that wouldn't have been possible. But so luckily we moved in a couple years ago before the world of COVID. And I remember having neighborhood barbecue on the driveway and getting to know a lot of people that way. And it just snowballed from there. And now we're all just hanging out all the time.
Yeah, it's great. In fact, I had an episode last week, the week before, I talked about how hard it can be to make friends as an adult and the value that has, not just, you know, socially, but even just like in your career, you just kind of learn new things. Even if it's not like, hey, this person got me a job, you just learn things and it helps you in your whole life in so many areas.
Yep.
Is this something you guys had always done in the past, or was it like, was it scary to reach out to all these people you don't know?
It was a little scary. No, we have not always done this in the past. We've always been somewhat like transient wherever we've lived. So we got married in Utah. We moved to Arizona following some stuff for Max. He was getting trained to be a motorcycle mechanic. So we went to Arizona and we knew it was short term. So something about knowing you're not in a place for very long makes it hard to want to plant roots. Mm-hmm. If I was to do it over again, I would still make the effort. But we lived in Arizona briefly. Then we had a 1 year internship for him in Milwaukee. Meanwhile, I'm working remote through all of this, but we're in Milwaukee and we knew it was another just 1 year internship. So once again, we didn't go out of our way to make any friendships. And then we moved back to Utah. But again, we were in a rental, and something about being in a rental in our minds was like, well, we're not here permanently either. So mm-hmm. we're not going to go out of our way and invest in the people around us, which is a giant mistake. So when we bought our house, we made a very, very intentional effort to get to know the neighborhood. I mean, you and everybody else, right? People were going to be around for a long time, hopefully, and you know, a lot of the time. So it was different for us, a little scary for us, but it's paid off. So,
oh, for sure. And it's funny because had a very similar situation where we lived in different apartments and places, and then at a certain point we get a house, and you're like, oh, this feels different. And you're right. So it could be a mistake to not still try to make those connections, but it seems like you can get this attitude of like, no one's reaching out to me. I'm not reaching out to them.
Yep.
And it's probably more in our heads than anything. I don't think anybody actually writes us off, but we kind of feel that way sometimes. Mm-hmm. But so much value in making those connections. And that was a huge example I brought up, is you guys coming to the neighborhood and starting these barbecues and making me realize, oh, you really can like live that American dream and have your neighbors be your friends and spend 4th of July except for in 2020 together.
Well, you see like the King of the Hill where it's the guys all just hanging out on the sidewalk talking all the time. And I love that because it's just the neighborhood. We're always just out together on our lawn chairs. The kids are running around talking. And
particularly two falls ago, like 2019, the kids would get on their like, what are those like battery powered cars, just going, there's a cul-de-sac and just going in circles. And we're all sitting on lawn chairs chatting. It was great. But one thing I want to ask you, Betsy, is something I've been trying to ask, and I don't always do it, but what was your relationship to money? Because the premise of my podcast is I'm trying to like stop being afraid to learn more about finances and investing and preparing for the future, and also having a more awesome present. Like I can build wealth now. I don't have to wait till I retire. But I look back at my childhood and what money was like to me, and it was, you know, not what I would have wanted it to be, but it was what it was. But how about you? What was money like? Did you get an allowance? Did you earn money? Did you save money?
Inconsistently. No, never saved. It wasn't something we talked about as a family. So there wasn't like a very open learning environment. I remember as a teenager, my mom just gave me, we had $100 a month. It was our clothing allowance. And I remember we had like church dances all the time. So I'd always use my clothing allowance to get cute new outfit to impress the cute boy, the church dance. And so honestly, I haven't learned too much about, we didn't learn too much about money, and it was just something we didn't really talk about. So I went to college and I had to set up a bank account for the first time, had no money to put in said bank account, had to get my first job. I never really had the pressure to get a job either growing up because my parents paid for all my things, right? Mm-hmm. Really competitive soccer. And that was, now the older I get, the more I appreciate how much money they spent on the things I was interested in as a kid.
Yeah.
But my, you know, wanted to go to the movies, my mom would give me a 20. So there wasn't a, you know, if you want to do this, you need to earn that. Mm. Which back then, of course, appreciated. And now I'm realizing maybe some tougher love would have been good because, you know, to start me off on like a, you know, learning more about if you want things, you have to earn things.
And yeah. And I think that's interesting because I think if them giving you money to buy clothes, it goes way beyond what a lot of parents do, I think, which is really cool because you, I'm sure there were times you realized you blew it all on maybe a pair of shoes or one yes. outfit and you're like, oh, now that's gone.
Yeah, definitely still some money lessons that.
Yeah, you know, so that's good, you know.
How do you, you know, and ever, so I always got the 100, like this was just probably from ages 12 to, there was like probably 4 years where $100 a month I got to spend on whatever I want. But essentially it was clothing and.
Yes.
And my mom did not like going clothing shopping with us. So it was kind of like, all right, go to the mall with your friends. Back when that was a thing. So yeah, how far can you stretch the $100 every month? You could get a really nice Abercrombie shirt so you can feel really cool, but there goes like half your money. And so we still definitely some money lessons.
Which is good. And it's just kind of, I kind of have this attitude of we're going to learn that we have to earn money at some point. And mm-hmm. I think the most valuable lesson is how to manage the money if we have it. So I think a lot of times we focus so much on like, I can't just give my kid an allowance. They have to earn it. It's like, well, yeah, there's value there. But I think just giving them some money to say, hey, like learn some lessons with this and also figure it out.
There's value in both, right?
Yeah, exactly. And then let's say your parents just gave you 20 if you want to go to the theater, which is good. But that could have also been like, hey, money just, I don't really need to worry about it because it'll mm-hmm. come. But also it could be value there where it's like a feeling of potential abundance. Like money is not such a thing that is so lacking. Like, hey, it's there. I may have to learn how to get it, but it's out there, you know? So really interesting. Very cool. And so as far as you, what I think is really awesome with your family is you are the primary financial earner in your home. You both have ways of making money, obviously, but you're the full-time worker. How is that for you guys? How has that been?
And it kind of was always that way to a degree. So when we were, you know, moving around following Max, his dream of becoming a motorcycle mechanic, I was working remotely for Honeywell at the time, moved to Arizona, got that job. Put him through school, paid off his loans from his program. And then we moved around and he had his internship. We moved back to Utah and he stayed at that job for a couple of years. But once you start having kids, you look at your money very differently. So we had our first, and we both still worked. So she went to daycare. No regrets with that because we met some really great people, but once we had our son, we had to stop and just look at the budget realistically and say, all right, well, putting two kids in daycare is the equivalent of one of your paychecks. So is it worth working, you know, a full month to only take home half of that, adding in the stress of drop off, pick up. And so we just looked at it from a variety of factors, like quality of life. We didn't like the stress of like, who's picking the kids up today? And we were, one of us always was like late picking up Harlan and it was stressful. And, so we were like, okay, we're gonna take that out. So we still would have been net positive money if we had kept Max in his role at the dealership, but the stress wasn't worth it. So we looked at it and decided that he would stay home as soon as we had our second. So he's been doing that for 2.5 years now. Just a month ago, he picked up a little part-time job for some fun money, so honestly, for his motorcycle, if we're being honest here. So, but it's been good. I think it's not totally rare, but you don't see it a lot. Maybe it's more in, I don't know if it's just in our area or just in general, but it's definitely like a mind, it's like a flip, you have to switch a little bit because I get, you know, all the doctor's appointments, both of our phone numbers are on there for the kids, but they always call me instead of Max. There's a lot of things that, and I'm like, hey, I'm working right now. Can you call my husband? So less so with money, but more just kind of moving people's assumptions about some simple things. And I'm
culturally speaking, you mean,
yeah,
right?
We're not offended by those things, but, and sometimes that does play into money, of course, too. Like as a woman, I'm very aware of the fact that I might be less inclined or less bold about asking for a raise or doing certain things, but I'm the primary breadwinner in our home and I have a responsibility to do my best to bring in income that will provide for our family. Kind of, as you said, short-term fun money, long-term planning, right? We got to think about it in both ways. So lots of cultural things to get over. Definitely, you know, for our kids, it's kind of fun to flip the switch a little bit. And But yeah, it's been good. I love to work, and he's definitely the patient one in the relationship too. So that's another factor that made more sense.
Well, yeah, it's awesome, and why not, right? So it's like, if you look at culturally speaking, there's things where there's assumptions made, and someone would just assume, oh, if one person's going to work, I guess it's the husband. Okay, just because that's socially the I don't even know if norm's a word, but just kind of like the it's majority kind of, like, of it's more you could say right. more common, I guess, is the word. But it's like, you guys, it's so common also for both people in a relationship to be working. Right. And there might come a time where you say, okay, is this worth it, all the expenses around this? And like you said, hey, maybe we're a net positive, but quality of life is super important, and stress and just the time and all the energy. So it's like, if I'm doing all this to make this much at the end of the day, not worth it. Because if that was your actual salary, you'd say, I'm not taking that job, you know? But, and you decide what makes the most sense for our family and who's on a certain path for you. It sounds like you were really liking the path you were on in your career. Yeah. And it made sense, I want to keep going.
And we also saw his role kind of had hit more of like a plateau, right? So at a dealership, there's only so many roles you can move into. Mm. And even the more tenured people weren't making that much more than Max already was. And at that time, I was already making more than Max was. And I still saw a lot of room to move up, right? And have since probably about doubled what I was making when we made that decision. But, you know, so we kind of also were looking at the potential. Like, and Max loved that job, so it was hard. But he also had to work every single Saturday. He worked till 7 most weekdays. And so it just wasn't really conducive to having two kids either in that sense. So
it's like that, but also like, hey, what are the future options here? Okay, there's these two things. And it's interesting that you also mentioned, like, there's things that you might feel, like, for instance, asking for raises. It's like you might feel a little more like maybe less aggressive about that. But that, I feel the same way. I get nervous around that. So it's kind of funny. We also make these assumptions that, like, hey, men are this way, women are that way. Well, maybe, but also it could be totally opposite.
There's people everywhere, you know, and I know a ton of women who are just like the boldest of the bold, but
And obviously there's cultural ramifications, unfortunately, for some women when they act this certain way, and it's not taken as it should be, which is ridiculous, but it's just kind of interesting, because I think sometimes I found myself painting myself into a corner, assuming this is just how I am.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm not technical. Well, now I'm a software engineer, so I guess I am technical. I just didn't think I was, you know? So that's really cool. So, and then as far as you've worked for like large companies with a culture and like potentially politics involved.
Yeah. My first role was at Honeywell, giant company. It was, I guess that's my second role, but I don't really like to talk about my first role because it was just not fun. Anyways, I had two coworkers who hated each other so much. And back then I worked at a little art gallery, and my office was the, you know, 2 square feet of desk next to the copy machine in the back room. That's where I worked. And the two other workers just hated each other's guts. So they would print something, not that they actually needed to print anything, just as an excuse to come into the copy room and talk to me about the other one. So then I started to develop, you know, like that, is it the Pavlovian response, like with the bell? Like, I would hear the copy machine and I'd run to the bathroom to like hide.
Oh, wow. Yeah, yeah.
And I remember a month down the line, one of my coworkers came up to me very concerned that I had a medical issue. So anyways, just to like paint how much I hated that job. So took the first job I could get, which was as an internal communication specialist at Honeywell. So very big company. It was about 130,000 employees at the time. And then was there for about 3 years, went to Workfront, which is a local company here in Silicon Slopes. That was about 1,000 when we got recently acquired by Adobe. So now I work at Adobe, another bigger company, about 25,000 people. And definitely there's politics just on different scales at all the companies. So it's just kind of a fun thing to navigate. And I'm learning, you know, some about my shortcomings as, you know, where I'm not being bold or confident, or even as a manager, you know, where I've got a lot of work to do. And so, yes, definitely familiar with kind of small company, big company.
And would you say that, like, from your perspective, as you've looked around, would you say that being a woman has had positive results or sometimes negative?
You know, I'm sure it's like anything where you see kind of both, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I've had bad work experiences with men, right? And I've had comments made, or I have a boss I won't name, but a somewhat recent boss we used to make comments about my hair a lot. So this is, sorry, this is kind of a tangent off the finance. This, we're off the financial train, but
it's all related, I think, in my mind.
Yeah, the work environment, though. Like, mm-hmm. I had a boss who would say things like, you know, on a day that I would be wearing my hair kind of naturally curly, she would say something like, you know, just a hypothetical story. Or actually, she kind of would tell hypothetical stories and then real stories. But she was telling me this story about somebody that she used to work with who started to straighten her hair and wear it in slick back ponytails. And what do you know, within like a month, that woman was promoted. Like, just like these weird stories that weren't super relevant, and essentially was her trying to say, I don't like your hair.
It's like a passive aggressive kind of way to like say, maybe be more professional or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like her talking about my hair. She didn't like my hair naturally wavy and down. And so she'd make comments and tell me these stories about other women who started doing certain things and they would get promoted. And it's like, there's so much that goes into getting promoted. It's not about straightening your hair.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Just comments like that or bad experience, you know, so there's differences, and I'm sure, everyone feels differences, but those are some of the kind of things.
Yeah. And obviously I don't want to like narrow you down to like, hey, you're a woman who works. It's like, you're an awesome employee at a company, and you've found opportunities to be in more and more managerial roles and have a team under you. And like, that's gotta be, that might've been kind of scary at first. Like, did you ever thought, like,
very scary,
they trust me to have people like to be under me? Yeah.
Yeah. It was like not long after I joined Workfront that I got a team. I suddenly had a person on my team. They're like, you're overloaded, and we have this person who we think could help you. And so they transferred somebody from another team to my team. And I was just like, oh, okay. So I'm like 4 years into my career. Now I'm a people manager. I have no clue what to do with this person. Now I manage two people, and I work with contractors, which is a very new thing for me to support contractors as well. But definitely like a deer in the headlights moment. But also something, okay, I'm just rewinding a little bit, thinking about experiences I've had. I remember when we were at Workfront, we had like not too long into my time at Workfront, they were doing like a pay parity exercise, and it, you know, like they're analyzing people with similar skill sets in the same roles, looking at data. Pay trends across gender.
Like at various companies or whatever?
Yeah. So like at Workfront, I remember they had to do a ton of corrections for a bunch of women who were doing the same jobs as men at Workfront. And whether it be through, I'm sure it was like none of these were intentional decisions, or maybe people negotiated less in the offer process. I don't know. I don't know how it got to this point, but there were people with, you know, significant pay differences. And that's the whole point of a pay parity exercise. And even Adobe does it annually to just say, hey, looking at gender, do we have people doing the same role, same responsibilities, but are we seeing any patterns in women making less than men? And they do an annual correction. It's a very small amount of employees that get corrected at Adobe, is my understanding. I'm new to the process, but I remember at Workfront, we went through that for our first time. And that was eye-opening to me that really existed, that people were making, you know, whatever sums different than people doing the exact same job as them. So I think it's really cool that companies now are making a much more intentional and transparent effort to make some of those corrections.
Oh, for sure.
But that was the first time I was like, oh, that's real. I hadn't really realized it for myself until I saw, you know, some of the data and, you know, that people and heard the stories like, oh, well, I got X increase because I learned that my coworker's making that much more than me. And it's just like, that was kind of my first eye-opening moment.
That's kind of, as far as I understand, like a newer thing to actually start considering these things. And this has been a thing, a problem for a long time. And it's not just women, it's minorities. It could be people with certain sexual orientations, whatever biases people have, even if it's not intentional, even if it's subconscious. You know, this whole idea of like, oh, well, he's got a family at home, so he needs more money. And it's assumption like, well, the wife, you know, she's working.
She's probably secondary income.
It's like that, which should not at all be a consideration for
anything. And that might be like a super underlying current of thought, right?
Just a minute. I'll be right up, okay? Sorry.
That's
my boy.
You know, and again, it's not, I mean, I it'd be incredibly rare that that something like that would ever be intentional, right?
Oh,
and
for
a lot
sure.
of it's like also, hey, let's say this person doesn't negotiate, right? You're like, oh, I'm getting a candidate for 30K less than my budget. No complaints here, right? Like,
yeah. And of course you ask questions like, why is it someone feel the empowered to negotiate? It could be from a systemic mm-hmm. like experience or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, for sure. Like I think, but what's really awesome is in a world where sometimes it can be scary to admit you've made a mistake, to correct things. Cause you could say, mm-hmm. what if I just hope no one notices? Because, sometimes saying, oops, look at this mistake I made could have its own repercussions. So to be able to say, let's correct this is really a very mm-hmm. awesome thing. Very cool. I think so as a manager, has there been things you've had to like learn financially speaking? Like, do you have budgets where you say, hey, we mm-hmm. have a team activity or we have marketing or things you have to kind of do either outward facing or maybe internally budgets? I don't know.
Yeah. So my work is all internal employee facing communication. It's funny, budgets and as a communications person are always tricky. So my budget is usually, you know, I pull from usually somebody else's budget, but I do have, you know, line items that belong to me every year. So, mm-hmm. I've learned about negotiating on software contracts. So I remember when we brought on an intranet vendor, which is, you know, the private internet portal for your employees, right? So we had an employee intranet. That was one of my first jobs at Workfront, was to, you know, build an employee intranet. And I remember negotiating with the vendor and negotiating. My boss was helping me at the time. And negotiating is not really the right word, because I remember it was like they gave us a number and we were like, cool. And we just did it, right? Like, I had never negotiated for software before. I assumed my boss had done it a bunch, right? And I don't know if he had either. And so then I remember a couple of years later, we were like, you know what, we actually maybe want to look at a different vendor. This one's not meeting our needs. And I learned so much about how much you can move the dollar sign on like a software contract negotiation. It was insane. I mean, we got, I'm talking like we went from like 100K to 50K. Just
wow.
with the right conversations.
Because if you don't know better, you're like, this is just what it is. It's like you used to go into the store. You don't go up to Target and say, how about you give me this for half the price? That's just not going to happen.
And then you take it. It's almost like job offers, right? Where you like you get an offer and you take it back to your employer, right? So for us, we got this offer. We took it back to our current vendor. They met it. But then we decided we still wanted to switch. But we got this great price and kind of did some back and forth. And
do you ever like feel like a certain feeling, I don't know, of guilt around like things like that? Because I do, because I would hate the idea of like,
yeah,
oh, I'm leveraging this opportunity.
Well, that's why the
to strong arm this, right?
The procurement team is good at what they do. That's their whole job, is to be like, emotion gone, pull it out of the equation. This is a business transaction and we know you can go lower, and the business is ultimately not going to offer you less than they could afford to make, you know,
exactly
offer you. So it's worth trying. So we saved a ton of money the second time around. And again, that was another like
eye-opening
related for me as mm-hmm. you know. And so I don't have a ton of budget. Like I was saying, I have a few line items. Intranet was always one of my annual line items. I get small budget for like team building and, you know, that kind of stuff. So that was like big moment for me. And then even probably shouldn't go into too much detail on this, but just looking at my employee salaries, right? Mm-hmm. And like, how can I advocate for them as their manager to get those to where I think those should be? Or, you know, those are things I've had to do in the past. And, but yeah, lots of money lessons that you don't realize you're going to get in your job outside of thinking about the money you take home. Like,
sure. And it seems like the higher you go, the more that comes into play, I'm sure.
Yeah. And even advocating for your own salary and even, mm-hmm. or even just kind of some of that corporate financial literacy, which I had never had before, but learning about pay bands. So like, for example, I'm leveled at a certain level in my job at Adobe, and it was the same at Workfront. And I think most big companies have pay bands, right? So it's okay, Betsy's making X dollars. And the range that she should make at this manager 30 level role or whatever it is, right? Is, you know, I'm going to use like round numbers for simplicity. I'll do millions. Sure. So let's say the range could be from $1 million to $2 million. The midpoint, you know, is that $1.5 million. Betsy's a little bit below median. So those pay ranges come into play too when you're doing like annual conversations, or even just an employee feeling empowered enough to say, hey, can we talk more about my salary band and where I fit in that? Like, I feel like that should be a conversation they should be allowed to have, right? Like, mm-hmm. hey, am I below the median in what people in my level are typically getting, right? So, you know, learning how to advocate for yourself financially, it comes down to just understanding a little bit how the back end works. And having sat in my communications role at Workfront, sat in a people department, and actually it does again at Adobe, but at Workfront, because it was so much smaller, my peers were head of compensation, head of HR. So I just got so much exposure to how do we manage pay conversations and annual merit increases, and we're using this contracted third party consulting firm who designs all of our pay bands, and just learning more about all of that was just, and it's information I'm going to use and I've already started using to advocate for my employees that I manage and for myself, even like, hey, where do I sit in the pay band? And can we have a conversation about why I'm below the median when I think I'm performing, you know, above average? And so there's just a ton of that I've learned sitting in.
Yeah. So it seems like kind of being able to, the more you understand the process, and it obviously will vary, but probably understanding what's happening at the company you're at now, there may be variations in other companies, but that's going to kind of, it's not going to be all together different. And understanding like what comes at play and like what kind of things are considered, and understanding what is my value. Cause that can be hard.
And when you're getting a new job too. So like I also head of recruiting at Workfront was one of my peers. So learning more about the recruiting process and how much wiggle room they actually do have in the back end. And sometimes, you know, and just like anything, sometimes there's more, sometimes there's less, but learning like, okay. And so I actually had a job offer in the middle of all the integration, and I ended up ultimately turning it down, but it was for like $15,000 more than I was making and honestly still am making. So, you know, some days I'm like, you know, but then I remember, okay, it's not just about the money. And that was the reason that would have been a good decision, but there are about 100 other reasons why staying where I was and moving forward with the Adobe integration was a much, much better decision. Right. But I use some of the skills that I, you know, knew in the back, and I'm like, okay, I know they have flexibility on this, so I'm going to push for that. And if I had never known that, I wouldn't have pushed for that. So I ended up getting an offer that was pretty good. They were still a company that didn't have very forward thinking benefits, right? It was a very standard, you know, time off, standard, you know, lots of things that at both Adobe and Workfront, I was spoiled to have unlimited PTO and this and that, or, you know, better maternity leave. And so many other factors that go into it. And that's another thing too, is salary is not everything.
Oh, like, for sure.
Would have been $15,000 more a year, but it would have reduced quality of life for me in a lot of other ways.
But also financially speaking, like depending on the actual benefits package, it's really important to actually work the numbers. Like, what is their 401k match, and how much vacation do they actually give in? What is that actually worth in dollars? And there's other things like, do they contribute to my HSA? There's like, and it's just, you don't always get this stuff up front, but like, how much does my premium actually cost for
and
my
that's
insurance?
Stuff that you can ask for up front though, that people don't often. They're like,
yeah, like if you don't, they may not just give it to you, but if you ask for it, is the premiums and like, what are the, what am I looking for? Like, the deductible and like, what would it cost? Like, if I had a baby, if I'm at Adobe, it costs me $2,000. If I'm at this other place, it'd be $8,000. Okay, that's important if I'm having a baby this next
year. Yeah. And that, you know, honestly, that was part of what helped me make my decision on this company too, is I was like, I need to see your benefits guide. And they wouldn't send me the benefits guide until and that's when I knew I was like in a final 2-3 candidate. And some companies will send it to you at that point and some won't. They're like, we won't send it to you unless we offer you. So then they offered me and I said, okay, now I need to see your benefits guide. And I just was looking through it and it was just very old school. And I was used to very entrepreneurial, startup-y, kind of more flexible, you know, work, flexible PTO, or your butt is in the seat from 8 to 5. You get 10 days of PTO. After 2 years, you're going to be at 11. After 4 years, you'll be at 12. Like, I learned a lot of stuff that I was like, that's not worth the $15,000 annually.
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, even if like the money ended up being, you went up ahead, but yeah, that's not the quality life you want. Mm-hmm. These are all things really anyone can learn. It's value to anybody as you're looking for opportunities or to negotiate within your current
company.
Yeah,
but sometimes you just don't know what you don't know, right? So like even like pay bands, that was a newer concept to me as of a couple of years ago, and learning about when you get slotted into a role, at most companies, assuming they have some sort of process for this, but mm-hmm. you're sitting within a pay band. Like there's a minimum and a maximum.
Within so, like for your role?
Yeah. So let's oh, say okay. My role was, excuse me. So let's say my role, the range was 1 to 2 million. Okay. Obviously not. but let's say I was sitting at 2. The conversation is then, does she need to be leveled up? Like, cause if let's say I wanted more money, they're like, okay, we're actually hitting, we're paying you the max we should pay for somebody at your level. So then their question starts to be with your manager. Okay. How do I get to the next level? Right. And not, it's not that you have to get to the max before you level up, but sometimes that is what forces that kind of conversation.
Yeah. That's a good point. Like, and those are good conversations and it's important. Like a lot of us have, you know, reviews either annually or sometimes weekly, sometimes monthly, maybe quarterly mm-hmm. with our management. Talk about like where you're at and don't be afraid to point out where you've grown yeah. and actually talk about where you're at before so you can compare it, you know, and it's okay to like not really brag, but you know, you want to show all the things that's you've good. Done and then come up with a plan with your manager of like, what's do I want to become? And
bragging about yourself is it's something that we're taught our whole lives not really to do. Yes. Right. It's like you're vain. That's, you know, you're just taught your whole life subconsciously, sometimes more directly, not to be brag, you know, not yeah. to brag. But it's actually a critical skill when you're in your career. It is to brag on yourself. And obviously in the right time, in the right place, and in the right way, it's a skill that I struggle with big time.
I agree. Like it's so much easier for me to like be self-deprecating and point out like where I screw up.
Yes. And then like, just assume someone's going to be like, no.
Yeah, exactly. And in some ways it's a way to like, yeah, to ask for validation, which I really try not to do that as much as I used to. But what I was going to say though, is go to your manager and find out, is there like a formal like definition of these different levels? And yes. like, I've learned like, okay, I'm a software engineer. Okay. Yep. There's a junior, there's like a mm-hmm. mid, there's a senior, there's a team lead, there's like management, you know, there's different levels. And it's like, what is the definition of being
yes.
a senior? And where are some places that you see, oh, if you level this up here in your skill set, you then could be qualified as defined as the senior role.
And
you
know, actually, like I was that. Using something exactly like that, that recently was able to get one of my employees leveled up because I was able to point to the language they created and say, she's doing all of those things.
Oh, she was already there. Yeah. We could all, conversely, you could have said, hey, look here, this is what you need. You mm-hmm. know, like if you're not there yeah. yet, it's like having a specific goal to work towards is so key, you know?
Yeah. So. A lot of this is just stuff that it took me a few years to learn, but if somebody at the outside of their career was like handed like, all right, let's do a little deep dive into pay bands. Let's do a deep dive into exactly what you said. Like what is leveling and how do they define the levels and where do you sit and what skills do you need to get? Like it's a much clearer roadmap than just like hoping that you're doing the stuff that's going to move you to the next level.
Yeah.
Getting like, hey, no, I'm mapping to this and this is the company's definition. So let's have a conversation about why I'm not at this level. Or
yeah. And we should treat
how I can get there.
Yeah. We should treat our careers just like we treat, like if let's say you mm-hmm. Want to have goals with like your investing or creating a business. So it's like, let's take these seriously. And even if it doesn't lead to us staying at that company, or maybe it leads us to skills that we go build our own company, whatever, but we right. should always take these things seriously with goals in mind. Cause like, why spend like such a huge part of your life, you know, doing something if you're not doing it as productive and effectively as possible.
Yep.
Right. Because yep. it's time away from our family. It's going to affect what we can do with our families if we can make more money yep. and things like that. So yeah, it's really mm-hmm. awesome. I really appreciate the time you've taken. It's really cool. Like I was telling you before, like, I don't know where these conversations will go. I have an idea of what I want to talk about, mm-hmm. but like, this has been really informative. This is fun
too, because it's reminding me that my sister, who's more junior in her kind of career,
yeah,
can honestly use. I mean, I'm not sure I've talked to her much about all of these different things that she could be using to advocate for herself. So it's kind of fun to think, okay, now I need to go talk the talk and share this information with my sister and, you know, the people in my life that could benefit from
yes.
learning how to negotiate.
This is what you do, Betsy. You go, you say, okay, here's the podcast. You need to yes. subscribe.
Subscribe.
You need to go to YouTube and subscribe to the YouTube channel. You got to.
There you go. Look
there's a this. Button on the anchor.fm site, anchor.fm/nobettertime, that you could even like support financially this podcast. I mean, come on, people, let's do this.
Woo! And one thing that this is like surfacing for me too is sometimes other people make us feel guilty about wanting more money. So like, for example, my sister just got like an internal move in her company. I'm so excited for her because it came with a $10,000 raise, a role that she's a little bit more excited about. But even just that $10,000 raise, I remember I was telling my mom, "That's so great. Stephanie's got this new job and she was able to, she applied for this internal role." And funny enough, she's going to be doing internal communications like me. So,
oh, that's nice. You know, she's got a mentor.
So fun. So she moved to this internal communications role at her company. That's kind of a new role. But yeah, $10,000 raise. And I remember they actually came back to her and it was about a $6,000. Like the offer was for about $6,000 more than she made, but they made the mistake of telling her that their budget was, you know, X. So they told me that. And I was like, no. They told you the budget's this. They like you. Obviously they offered you the job. You already have some internal street cred, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I was telling my mom, I was like, oh yeah. So I told Stephanie to tell them that she wanted this much. My mom was like, oh my gosh. Like she shook her head and was like, it was like, she thought it was like this greedy, like, oh, Stephanie.
Was this before she was successful or was it like,
I was telling her the story. So
I could see like that fear of like, oh no, you've maybe screwed it up. You have that fear sometimes. Like if I ask for this, they're just going to say, forget it.
It was a little bit of that. And I think that's also too, like from our parents, a more conservative, like, you just take what you're offered. You take what you're given.
Yeah.
Don't
be like greedy. It was a feeling of ungratitude or something.
Yeah.
Like.
But she said, hey, can I have this instead? It was for like $4,000 more than they offered and still $5,000 less than they had said the range included.
Yeah. Which is a smart
for their
move.
Budget. So $10,000 increase for her overall. And it took them like an hour to just get her new offer letter. Like, yeah, of course. It was an hour. She asked, she was just that brave and asked one question. And her salary increased by $4,000.
Per year.
Like, per year.
Exactly.
Right?
It's not like even if it was a one-time $4,000 thing. But no, this is per year. Every
this
month.
This is per year. And then her next job builds off of the salary of this job. So exactly. Like that is a different, that's that small conversation she had just anyways. But, a tangent, no, but I think that says a lot of different things in one story.
And you start to realize like any amount of money you get more, like just kind of compounds because it like you make more, but then the next job, and it gives you more power to say, no, I don't want that opportunity because you don't have to take every opportunity that comes to you.
This is what I'm worth.
I'm worth this much more. Like I'm happy. Like if you want me, you're going to have to pay me maybe $30,000 more. Who knows? You know what I mean? Like whatever. Yeah. So awesome. But once again, Betsy, thanks so much for your time for your input. Mm-hmm. If anybody has questions that I could redirect to Betsy or in general about finances or kind of going up the corporate ladder and managing people, you can email me at nobettertime.podcast@gmail.com. I could forward those on to Betsy and see what she has to say. Do my best to answer them myself. Also, if you have topic suggestions, things you'd like to hear about, I'd love to hear that too. Have a great day and thanks so much. And don't be afraid to recognize your greatness. And point it out to those
ask for that money.
And ask for that money.
Worst that happens is they say no.
All right, bye.
Thanks for listening. You can support the No Better Time podcast by going to anchor.fm/nobettertime and selecting the support button. But the best support you can give is by listening and engaging. I want to hear from you. Send your thoughts, questions, and topic ideas to nobettertime.podcast@gmail.com. Or you can leave a voice message by going to anchor.fm/nobettertime and clicking the message button just below the podcast description. Please subscribe wherever you listen and rate and review if that's an option. Check out the video version of the podcast on YouTube by searching No Better Time Podcast, and don't forget to subscribe there as well. And if this episode would help someone, don't forget to share it with them and let them know about the podcast.